Dr. Smith. I have Eugene Roach from the USDA Honeybee Breeding Center on the line.
Put him through. Smith here.
I have the results you requested.
Have you been running?
No, I've been working.
Then why are you so out of breath?
Because I've just gotten off the wildest roller coaster of my professional life.
Explain.
First, I attempted to examine the detached wing. Inadvertently, I held it too close to a high-intensity desk lamp. The wing shriveled up from the heat.
That's inexcusable carelessness.
No, not all of it was burned. I saved a corner of it. When I projected it onto the wall, I saw something that almost gave me a heart attack.
Yes?
This bee has a death's head on its thorax. It's almost perfect. You couldn't get a more perfect skull if an artist painted it.
I understand that.
I should have suspected it from that evidence alone, but I had no idea. Who would have thought it?
Thought what? Get to the point.
In the corner of the wing was a machine-perfect black T in a circle.
A marking you recognize?
A marking a 5-year-old would recognize. It's a trademark symbol.
Trademark?
Yes, a trademark. I examined the whole bee, and its right wing also showed the same marking. This bee is trademarked.
Then there is no question that the death's head bee was created by some genetic program. Just as certain enzymes and bacteria can be trademarked for commercial use.
That was my thinking, too, until I dissected the bee.
What did you discover?
At first, I was interested in taking measurements of the thorax, wings, legs. It never occurred to me to enter the body cavities and explore.
Go on.
The body parts, of course, did not correspond to the Bravo Bee. I ascertained that from a casual examination, but I wanted to record the measurements for future reference. As I was doing that, I felt the detached wing between my fingers. It felt wrong to the touch.
Wrong?
I've handled many bee wings in my career, and I know how they feel against naked skin. These were too slick, too smooth. A bee's wing feels something like old cellophane, if you know that texture. This was entirely different, so I did an analysis of it.
What did you find, Dr. Roach?
I found that the bee's wing was composed of mylar.
Mylar?
Yes, a man-made substance. At that point, I attacked the bee's interior structure, and what I found gives me the shivers. This bee's not a bee. It's man-made.
Man-made?
Yes, isn't that fantastic? Someone has engineered a bee. That means he's discovered the secret of how bees fly. We've been trying to crack that one for decades. Oh, isn't that incredible?
Dr. Roach, whoever created that bee has devised one of the most deadly killing tools ever unleashed on this nation. Against that threat, the secret of bee aerodynamics is unimportant.
There's more, Mr. Smith. Its stinger is nothing other than a tiny hypodermic needle. The entire abdomen is a reservoir for Africanized bee neurotoxin. It's not an Africanized killer bee, but it carries the same toxin. Isn't that ingenious?
I would use the word insidious.
Oh, and I'm not sure about this part, but the head seems to contain a scanning mechanism. I'd have to examine it under an electron microscope, but I have the feeling there's a miniature television camera in there.
In other words, the bee is a combination of flying spy and assassin in a single package?
This bee could do anything an ordinary bee can do, except pollinate flowers. And I wouldn't doubt for a minute it could perform that function as well.
Dr. Roach, what you have told me must remain classified until you have been clear to release it to the public.
Well, I assume I'll be allowed to author a paper on my discovery.
You will, assuming you find a safe and secure place to hide. Several people have already died so that the secret you have uncovered does not leak out to the world.
Oh, who'd want to kill me?
The genius who devised that insidious little creature.
Well, it's a machine, actually, not a creature.
One way or another, it has killed and it will kill again.
Oh, right, you have my word. I think I better be going now.
You do that, Dr. Roach. Your assistance will be critical in bringing a close to this catastrophe.
By the time Remo and Chun reached the street, the action they had been sent to witness had already transpired. A crowd had gathered around a dead man lying in the middle of the stopped traffic. The corpse was dressed like a yellow jacket wasp. A cop was kneeling over the body. When he got the man's golden helmet off, the eyes behind the green compound lenses looked as if they had been gouged out.
Well, at least we didn't have to hang around for long.
This doesn't make any sense, Remo. The Beemaster's own bugs killed him.
That isn't Beemaster.
Remo looked down. A boy of about 10 with blonde hair cut in a mushroom fade stood there.
Who asked you?
Nobody, but you called him Beemaster.
Everybody knows Beemaster wears a silver cybernetic helmet with infrared goggles. That's Death Yellowjacket.
Death Yellowjacket?
Yeah, he's much cooler.
Well, now he's much deader.
That isn't the real Death Yellowjacket. Just some guy dressed like him for the convention.
What convention?
The boy puffed out his chest. On his t-shirt's front was a Dayglow green and red logo for the New York Comic Collectors Spectacular.
The comic convention. It's at the Marriott. I just came from there.
The boy held up a fat sheaf of comic books sealed in clear Mylar envelopes.
Do you have any Donald Duck?
Nah, nobody reads Duck comics anymore. It's all superheroes.
Out of the way! Out of the way!
An ambulance was in the process of pulling up. The police were pushing the crowd out of the way to give the paramedics access.
Did you see this guy at the convention?
No, but there's a costume contest at 6. He was probably dressed for that. Too bad he died. Bet he'd cop first prize.
Remo and Chun swapped looks. Remo's was puzzled, and Chun's was bland.
Tell me, kid, why would Beemaster want to kill Death Yellowjacket?
He wouldn't. Beemaster wouldn't kill anyone. He's old-fashioned that way. On the other hand, Death Yellowjacket kicks butt and takes names.
Humor me. If Beemaster wanted to kill Death Yellowjacket, what's his motive?
That's simple. Death Yellowjacket outsells Beemaster 2-1. And bees and wasps hate each other anyways.
Told you so.
Well, we better get over there.
Upon arriving at the Marriott Marquis, Remo and Chun headed directly for the registration area. Checking in with the organizers of the costume event, they learned that the only man registered to attend as Death Yellowjacket had signed up under the name of Morris Baggett. Knowing that the information they had gathered could best be researched and analyzed by Smith and his colleagues at the FBI, they set out for the nearest payphone.
Remo, observe.
Chun had noticed a man in black spandex descending in one of the capsule-like glass elevators. His head was encased in a stainless steel helmet mask with glowing red eyes.
Uh-oh.
Remo turned to a desk clerk who sat at an information desk next to the phone bank.
Hey, you wouldn't happen to know who that is, would you?
That's Mr. Pym.
Pym? Not Peter Pym.
That's right. Do you know him?
Only by reputation. What's his room number?
Looks like room 33-4.
Where's the comic book thing being held?
Ballroom.
Thanks. Okay, listen, Chun. That's gotta be our guy. He's operating under Beemaster's alias. Looks like he's headed to the comic book show. No doubt to capture first prize in the costume contest now that Death Yellowjacket is out of the picture.
We will vanquish him and avenge the stalwart wasp.
First, let's check out his room.
Gladly, Remo. Let us find the elevator.
The door to room 33-4 opened easily after Remo stunned the electronic lock with the heel of his hand. Inside, they found stacks of sealed comic books with the price tags still on the Mylar envelopes. Under the bed, Remo found a carrying case with an ID tag in the name of Peter Pym, along with an address in Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, looks like this guy takes his Beemaster pretty seriously.
Setting the box on the bed, he forced it open. Inside was a purple plush shelf like a jeweler's display case, except that in each depression sat a fat death's head bumblebee instead of a precious stone. Remo's hands moved like pale blurs. He punched down so hard that the bees and case were so much mangled debris.
Whoa, that was close.
You were in no danger.
Only because I stung them first.
Those bees slept the sleep of things that do not live, except at the will of their master.
Stooping, the master of Shenanju plucked one of the mashed bees from the rug and raised it to the level of his pupil's eyes.
Look more closely, blind one, and behold the true nature of the not-bee.
It had been a long time coming, but his hour of triumph had come at last. Peter Pym basked in the applause of the ballroom full of people as he accepted the pewter trophy, giving him first prize in the 12th anniversary New York Comic Book Spectacular Costume Parade. And he deserved it. His Beemaster regalia wasn't only a faithful reproduction to the most minute detail, but it was fully functional as well, from the suction cup vacuum boots to the cybernetic helmet. It was true that as Beemaster, he couldn't commune with actual living bees, but he had improved on the genius of the original Beemaster concept. He created his own bees, more powerful, more formidable than any strain known to man. Now, walking off stage, clutching his trophy, He moved confidently through the crowd of his fellow comic book fans towards the glass elevator and his room. Smith was still buzzing from excitement. Roach's discovery had brought the entire picture clearly into view. Now it was just a matter of moving before the robotic bee's creator ordered them to strike again.
Dr. Smith, I have a personal call for you on the line. The man wouldn't identify himself.
Put it through. Remo?
We hit the jackpot, Smitty. Our man's here. He's in town attending a comic book convention.
Ridiculous.
No argument there. But listen before you jump to the wrong conclusion.
All right, go ahead.
We witnessed another strike in New York. The victim was some fatso all dressed up as Death Yellowjacket on his way to a comic book convention.
You must hurry, Remo. I'm beginning to jump to conclusions already.
We went over to the Marriott to check out the action at the conference. As it turns out, a guy going by Peter Pym was signed in at registration. We just got back from searching his room.
What did you find?
We found a case filled with those Death's Head bumblebees. And guess what?
They are mechanical.
Yeah. How'd you guess?
I didn't. I've just heard from the USDA Honeybee Center. The dissection showed the sample bee to be a nanobee.
A what?
A nanobee.
Empress Smith is trying to tell you it is a not bee, as I have said all along.
Quiet, Sean. What's a nanobee?
An ingenious form of nanomachine.
Okay, I'll bite. What's a nanomachine?
A device engineered on the microscopic level. It is a new branch of engineering. Already there are microscopic machines capable of performing simple tasks. As the state-of-the-art advances, more complex devices are expected to come into existence that will allow doctors to perform microsurgery by introducing miniature robots into a patient's body, or to create an enzyme that attacks a biological structure. It's nanomachines like those that are tearing through America's standing crops. Who knows what's next?
So the little one-eyed bugs are machines too?
Obviously. The bees are a cruder form of nanomachine, not as miniaturized, but certainly as lethal. Not to mention useful for spying.
I guess that explains how all those bees were able to follow us and talk, too. They're robots.
They are no doubt controlled by this bee master through radio signals. One assumes the country has been seeded with them.
Well, I guess that explains that. Now we just have to mop this guy up without getting ourselves chewed alive.
That will not be easy, Remo.
You're telling me. Know anything we can use to jam up his frequency?
Not without knowing much more about his equipment.
I was afraid you were going to say that. Any ideas, little father?
Ask Emperor Smith what an EpiPen is.
Chun wants to know what an EpiPen is. He just found a big clear plastic pen in a drawer and it says EpiPen on the side.
An EpiPen is a syringe, not a pen. It is used to deliver epinephrine and adrenaline. Remo, listen. EpiPens are carried by people who are highly allergic to bee stings. In the event of a stinging, they inject themselves in order to counteract the systemic symptoms of anaphylactic shock.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Our bee master is allergic to bee stings.
Nice going, little father.
It is nothing. Any genius would have accomplished the same brilliant result.
Remo, I think this affair can be resolved safely with no danger to Master Chun or yourself.
I'm thinking that too.
Here is what I suggest you do.
It was nearly time to do the remote interview with Tamara Terrell of Fox Network News and announce to the world his demands. Demands that until now had been so rudely ignored by the late publisher of the Sacramento Bee. Pym ignored the rude stares of the common herd as he roved the hotel corridors. Let the lesser mortals gawk as they would. In time, they would be forced to relinquish their dominance over a planet that rightfully belonged to its ultimate inheritors, the Insect Kingdom. A planet whose dominion would be returned to its proper lords, the crickets and the grasshoppers, the bees and the hornets, and allied with them until the end of time, their true lord, the Bee Master. It was a dream come true. A lifelong fantasy turned to reality. It had taken 30 grueling years to bring to fruit. Ever since that glorious spring day in 1962 when he had picked up his first issue of Tales to Amaze You. Now it was just a few minutes away. Pym could barely contain his excitement as he came to his hotel room door. Immediately, he sensed something was amiss. His every insectoid sense went to red alert. His antenna quivered atop his helmet. At first, he suspected that it had perhaps been the hotel housekeeper who set things out of order. Then, Pym saw his box of death's head bees lying open and strewed about the floor.
Someone will pay for this.
Pym dropped to a knee on the rug. Every one of his bees was destroyed. Each exquisite gem of miniaturized technology pulped as if they were nothing more than winged raisins. Slowly, fists clenched, he climbed to his feet, standing tall and proud in his beemaster uniform.
I swear to wreak my awesome vengeance on all who oppose me!
Pym smiled under his cybernetic helmet. He had always wanted to give that speech in real life. It was from Bizarre Beemaster number 3, the Crimson Cockroach issue. Pym froze. The low, curious sound indicated that one of his beautiful bumblebees might have survived the heartless massacre. Striding over to the door, he narrowed his eyes behind his scarlet eye lenses. If one of his bees was still alive, he should have been able to receive its visual telemetry signal and see exactly what the bee saw. But there was no transmitted image on the inner side of his flat eye lenses. It was already too late by the time he realized that the sound he was hearing wasn't that of one of his death's head bees, but the annoyed buzz of a feral honeybee.
No!
It was too late. The bees were out and flying around the room.
No! Stay back! You are not one of my brood! You are not in league with the Bizarre Bee Master!
The bees ignored him. They circled and dive-bombed him, whether out of anger or fear, he didn't know.
No! I'm your friend! I am a friend to all bees, all insects!
The sharp prick between Pym's shoulder blades told him he had been stung in the back. His right shoulder twitched with another sudden pain. Yet another pierced the back of his right glove. The bee fell to the rug, squirming in its twisty death throes. Pym's throat immediately began constricting.
No, not this way. The Bizarre Bee Master cannot meet his end this way. I can't be poised on the threshold of my greatest triumph. My EpiPen, it will save me. My EpiPen. Where is it? Where is my EpiPen?
Pym could find no sign of the life-saving medicine amid his Beemaster underoos and t-shirts. Meanwhile, the ferocious, insistent, indomitably angry bees continued their relentless attack. He knew from the countless pinpricks erupting all over his body that these were no less than Africanized honeybees. Falling to the floor, he made a last, desperate attempt to contact his nanomites in the vicinity. They would protect him. They would come to his aid. But try as he might, he couldn't focus his thoughts and broadcast the electronic signal that would bring the deadly creatures of his own devising to combat these bees who, in their blind fury, their unthinking ignorance, were slowly killing their only champion among a vicious humanity. A feathery sensation alighted on Pym's tongue, but a sharp pain replaced it. His tongue had swelled up, reacting to the potent venom of a bee that in its death spasms rolled down his open throat. As he clutched up in a ball, like a dying insect himself, the Bizarre Bee Master heard a tapping and turned his flat scarlet eyes to the balcony window in response to the sound. His decreasingly coherent mind told him that the nanomites had come to succor him, but just as fast, his leaping hope turned to crushing defeat. In his mind's final lucid grasp at the world, he realized that it was instead two familiar bipeds behind the glass. It was a tall man with wrists like tree trunks and an old Asian in a long silken robe. He didn't know who they really were. Agents of the forces of darkness, without question. The old Asian was waving goodbye. The other one was holding up the missing EpiPen, the one thing that could preserve his life and all his grandiose plans for the future of insectdom. Slowly, painfully, as Bravo Bees punished him mercilessly, he crawled toward them.
I am indomitable. I cannot be defeated. I refuse to be defeated. I refuse.
That's just the biz, sweetheart. Just the biz.
Remo waited for the Beemaster to finish convulsing.
Not a good day for Pym, huh?
Indeed, it is not.
The bees in the room flew at Remo and Chun with the same single-minded anger they had displayed against Pym. Casually, the two men thwarted their every attempt to strike, urging them out through the open door and into the dusk of late afternoon. Remo stripped the body of its helmet, lifted it to head height, and collapsed it like a shell of tin. He threw the remains into the waste paper basket. They looked down at the bloated, cyanosed face of the bizarre Beemaster.
I wonder who he was.
He is dead. Nothing else about him matters.
Across town, in the Manhattan studios of Fox TV, Tammy Terrell was getting ready for the interview of her career. It would be live, it would be real, and it would be a TV first. She could hardly sit still through makeup, but she had to look her best. Fox was almost behind her now. The majors would be after her by this time tomorrow, and may the highest bid win. Smoot was by her side. Tammy knew that he could be moving to the front office if this interview went as well as she planned, but as far as he was concerned, it had been a letdown when she told him she didn't plan to head out to the field as they had previously arranged.
Tam, this had better be good. I wanted you in tall cotton, not under hot lights.
Don't sweat it. It's going to be better than good. It's going to be spectacular.
Taking her seat at the Fox anchor desk, Tammy checked her lavalier mic and waited for the red tally light that would tell her she was live. The bumblebee was hiding under the desk. On cue, it would emerge and alight on the desk, and the interview would begin. And so would Tammy Terrell's national career as a media superstar. When the tally light came on, Tammy looked back at the camera with her cool blue gaze.
This is Tamara Terrell, and this is the Tamara Terrell Report. Tonight, with America's heartland under siege and killer bees swarming in our major cities, Fox News Network brings you an exclusive report that will rock the news world.
The camera zoomed in for a close-up. Tammy lifted the bee onto the desk. It sat there.
A being known only as Beemaster has thrown down the gauntlet and is demanding to be heard. And Fox, the news network of the new millennium, is the only network brave enough to give this mystery man a hearing.
Tammy flashed the quiet bee the okay sign. The bee stirred on its tiny feet.
With me now is what might appear to be a common, ordinary bumblebee. But is it?
The bumblebee jumped up into the lights and circled Tammy's head once.
No, this is no ordinary bee, but a death's head super killer bee. But even that is not the entire incredible story.
The bee dropped back onto the desk and faced Tammy. The camera dollied in on the skull imprinted on its back.
This bee is an emissary of the Beemaster, and through its own tiny bee voice, we will hear what the Beemaster has to say. His powerful words will truly affect the future of all human civilization.
Tammy picked up a microphone off the desk and pointed it at the bee.
Mr. Bee, speak your piece. America is listening. Tell us about the Beemaster. Go ahead, we're listening. We're live!
Tammy nudged it with the mic. The bee fell over. Its tiny legs stuck up, stiff and lifeless in the air. There was only one thing for Tammy to do, and that was to attempt another broadcast first. She leaned over to the sprawled-out bee, pressing her lips nearly over its entire body in a panicked act of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Her only accomplishment was accidentally swallowing her guest interviewee.
We seem to be having technical difficulties.
Had Tammy had the nerve to look through the soundproof glass into the control booth, she would have seen several Fox executives silently screaming at each other. The set went black, and so did the career of Tamara Terrell. A week later, Remo sat waiting for his date with Jean. He was only about 6 days late, which was a good sign. She would have to be flexible to make a relationship work with a man such as him.
Are you canceling on me, babe?
I have determined the identity of the Beemaster.
Oh, okay. But hurry up, I have a hot date.
His real name was Peter Pym.
Wait a minute, that's the real Beemaster's real name. I mean the fictitious one's real name.
Peter Pym is a nanoscientist attached to UCLA. His diaries have been found. Evidently, as a young boy, he discovered a Beemaster comic book, and struck by the coincidence of their shared name, he resolved to become Beemaster in real life when he grew up. He studied biology and biochemistry, but his plans were frustrated when he discovered it was impossible to commune with insects through electronic means. Further, he was highly allergic to bee stings. So Pym pursued other avenues. In time, he was attracted to the field of nanotechnology, and there realized that his dream was not impossible after all. He needn't communicate with actual bees if he could instead create obedient artificial bees of his own.
That is the single nuttiest thing I have ever heard.
Nevertheless, it is true. Pym set out on a campaign to wage war on those who had waged war on the insect world, starting with Doyle T. Rand. His nanomites, as he called them, were created to demonstrate his power. But he was unable to make his demands public because his chosen vehicle refused to cooperate.
Having gotten the job done, Remo was only marginally interested in all of this. He stared up at the wall clock. Jean was due at any moment.
Oh, and who would that be?
The publisher of the Sacramento Bee.
Well, that makes sense in a moronic kind of way.
So instead, he chose Tammy Terrell.
Yeah, and we all know what happened there.
Your timing was fortunate. She has been so professionally embarrassed that she is unlikely to resurface again. More importantly, the Beemaster menace is over. There has not been a single attack since you vanquished Pym. All his equipment and insects we have found have been destroyed. I have so informed the president.
Well, all's well that ends well. And here is my date. Catch you later, Smitty.
Remo started down the stairs. Remo cringed, knowing that only one person could have been the one to let Jean in. A moment later, the old bat herself came rushing up, her yellowed, pruned face crimson as an apple.
How's it going, Granny?
Hope you and foul-mouthed white girl marry soon. You deserve each other. Good riddance.
Have a nice evening.
Jean was waiting at the open door, dressed in a shimmering blue nightgown. She looked Remo up and down, taking in his casual attire.
You're not going out looking like that, are you?
Oops.
Jean's frown turned into a grin as she reached behind her and hoisted into view a neatly pressed suit on a hanger.
I cashed in my lottery ticket. So tonight we ride in style and you dress so I'm not embarrassed to be seen in public with you. Not that I would be anyway.
Remo took the suit.
What'd you tell Grandma Mulberry? She looked like someone spanked her good.
Oh, she tried to give me a hard time. So I used the line you taught me to.
Tweed Jula?
Yep.
That got her, huh?
Well, I added you old bone bag, too.
Okay. I just gotta let Chun know not to wait up.
Remo couldn't find Chun anywhere. He wasn't in the bell tower meditation room or kitchen. Even the fish cellar was empty. Finally, Remo decided to check Chun's private room.
Hey, Chun, you in here?
Inside, there was no sign of the Master of Shinaju, but on a low taburet, Remo found a book. Recognizing the cover, he picked it up.
The Joy of Astral Sex. Hey, this is the same book I caught Grandma Mulberry with.
So? They're reading the same book. What's wrong with sharing?
Except I jammed her copy down the garbage disposal. Wait. You don't suppose... Not Chun. Not with her.
Hey, he's old. Not dead. And neither are you.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
The night is young. Let's get out of here. You can change clothes in the car. I'll try not to peek.
Shrugging, Remo dropped the book and followed her out.
Now I'll never get rid of that old fishwife.
The Destroyer, Feast or Famine, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1997, M.C. Murphy. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. With performances by Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Jeff Baker, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Dolores King-Williams, James Konacek, M.B. Van Dorn, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Local editing and graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld and Kyle Unaver. The Destroyer theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Brian Patton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Matt Jacobs. If you enjoyed The Destroyer, be sure to look for our other exciting titles, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.